Today's episode of the Watson Weekly Podcast is sponsored by Commerce Tools.
Make sure your brand and your business is ready for the trillion-dollar e-commerce market. Commerce Tools, the global leader in commerce and creator of the powerfully composable Mach architecture, can help you achieve bite-sized wins or upsized achievements faster than ever. Whether you are looking to reduce maintenance costs for legacy systems or put the power of AI to work for you quickly, Commerce Tools is your partner for commerce success. Go to commercetools.com to learn how to get started.
It's April 29th, 2024, and this is the Watson Weekly, your essential e-commerce digest. Today on our show, PayPal's coming battle with Shopify. Nike failures highlight leadership issues. UPS Q1 2024 earnings show continued decline. Software as a service growth down from 2022 highs. And finally, the Investor Minute, which contains five items this week from the world of venture capital, acquisitions, and IPOs. But first, in our shopping cart full of news, PayPal's coming battle with Shopify. I think it's important to watch the payment space because it is the monetization engine of most e-commerce platforms. And that's why PayPal recently partnering with companies like Commerce Tools and BigCommerce last week, which was announced at the Commerce Tools Elevate event, makes you pay attention. Stop me if you've heard of a product like this before. It transforms the guest checkout experience. Buyer payment data is confirmed with an SMS code. And consumers can save their information with as little as one tap. Sounds like Bolt or Shop Pay, right? This PayPal quote-unquote innovation, which was launched this year, is called PayPal Fastlane. And legit, it's kind of a copy of what Bolt and Shop Pay has done. And this actually gives companies like Commerce Tools, BigCommerce, and others a widely distributed guest checkout accelerator, which is essentially what Shop Pay is. Since the introduction of Shop Pay in 2017, it only stands to reason that the percentage of PayPal adoption on the Shopify platform has been declining, and that decline must be continuing to accelerate. With the announcement of the Shop Pay component for enterprise, Shopify has officially entered the enterprise market, sure. But what did they really do? They actually entered PayPal's primary market. This allows Shopify to potentially take a share of off-platform payment volume from PayPal. The announcement of PayPal Fastlane in January was a defensive move by PayPal, i.e., how do we stop the bleeding? The short answer is to copy Shop Pay using PayPal resources. The good news is this development is actually great for merchants. Price competition between Shopify and PayPal should reduce prices. And service levels could go up for everyone as PayPal realizes they need to up their game. What's next for PayPal? Actually ensuring the Shop app doesn't also rise. The PayPal app is becoming copies of many of the features of Shopify's Shop app. There are cashback offers in the PayPal app. They're trying to help consumers decide what to buy next. And they're using things like smart receipts to track purchases. Does this sound familiar to the Shop app? The bad news for Shopify in this case is that PayPal actually has more history working with consumers than Shopify does. And PayPal has many more merchant relationships than Shopify. The good news for Shopify is that from a merchant point of view is that PayPal is an extremely difficult company to work with from literally dozens or hundreds of conversations I've had over my career. The merchant tools are hard to use, limiting, and have a dizzying array of changing rules. Your funds can be kept at any time if you leave it there. Ultimately, PayPal can be as hard to work with as Amazon. This is actually Shopify's advantage as a known merchant-friendly company and could be helpful to them in the coming payment wars. The bad news for Shopify is the number of relationships they have. I believe in the next 2 years, expanding merchant relationships could prompt Shopify to merge with Stripe, perhaps even as part of Stripe's eventual IPO. Two companies fighting PayPal, even in a coordinated manner, would not be as efficient as one together. Eventually, Shopify cannot leave their primary monetization engine to chance. Our second story, Nike's failures highlight leadership issues. What's the role of technology in your organization? Is it a silver bullet solution to every problem or an enabler to the core assets of the brand? Based on two Wall Street Journal articles recently on both Nike and Ferrari, it's clear which is which. In Ferrari, the new CEO, Vigna, started with a focus on people and then a great product that meets the needs of its enthusiasts. The CEO flattened extra management layers with the express goal of getting leaders closer to direct customer feedback and improvement. The CEO is quoted as saying, "Imagine an onion. The center is the people. The next layer is product, and the final layer is process." This is actually a nice quote which fits the business well. The company moved to a small team structure where the test drivers are the customers and equal to the engineers, rather than being nested under the engineers. The company, instead of hiring expensive outside consultants and helping choose its vision, instead trusted its top employees' feedback and worked with the enthusiasts of its product instead. The CEO himself directly collected feedback and developed a strong point of view. This is a strong contrast to Nike. The company neglected the core of its product, i.e. innovation. Instead, it rested on its laurels. How many times have we said, what does Nike stand for anymore? The company cut out its retail partners in an attempt to, quote, own the customer, thinking this was its biggest asset. Instead, because it's going direct, it took on more inventory at exactly the wrong time and invested in technology for its own sake. Finally, it followed the Silicon Valley fad of just cutting staff for its own sake, which didn't help. In truth, the current CEO, John Donahoe, was put on a bad path by founder Phil Knight and the former CEO, who's the current executive chair of the board, and they had the wrong goal. The goal is not to own the customer. The goal is to serve the customer. It's actually a matter of priority and a super important distinction. If your only goal is ownership and not service, you will own very few customers looking for discounts and your business will decline. If your primary goal is service and then ownership, you will own your most important customers for life and recognize that your retail partners can service many of your customers in a healthy, growing business. After all, if we are not in service of the customer, then our business is not long for this world, no matter how great your legacy brand is. Our third story. UPS Q1 2024 earnings show continued decline. UPS is focusing on profitability in the face of declining volume, because what else can you do? UPS consolidated revenues were down over 5% year over year to $21.7 billion now. In the U.S., this decline was down 5%, driven by a 3% decrease in average daily volume. Last year, UPS claimed that after the Teamsters agreement was signed, it was a simple matter for them to reclaim small parcel volume. This has not worked out so well. Since September of 2022, when volume peaked, revenues have been on a steady decline. In essence, UPS volume continues to decline even further. So much for that narrative, right? What's worse, adjusted net income fell over 30%. Where is UPS now? Look, let's be honest. While I personally think UPS has a better plan than FedEx because they were able to describe which segments like healthcare they would like to grow faster in, they are still in trouble because they can hardly expect any Amazon volume going forward. The company also won a USPS $1.5 billion contract from FedEx for its air cargo. While that business was not profitable for FedEx, UPS is promising that it will be more efficient than FedEx was due to its integrated network. Now, both Walmart and Amazon, of course, will continue to grow fast and pull all their fulfillment in-house. This means who will get new parcel volume? The growth will have to be from smaller shippers who are harder to access and can be extremely price-sensitive due to the increasing competitiveness of offerings like USPS Ground Advantage. And our last story, SaaS growth down from 2022 highs. There are a lot of software as a service founders wondering what the license plate number is of the truck that just hit them. And I'm hearing from a lot of them that growth rates are down, like way down. Down from 70 plus percent a few years ago to now often flat to only up 10 to 15 to 20%. Jason Lemkin from Saster published some numbers recently of 9 SaaS category leaders whose average growth rate in 2022 was 67%. Now, these are leaders across all software categories, not just e-commerce. Names like Snowflake, CrowdStrike, and Datadog. What are their growth rates now? On average, down to 23%. The message here is simple. If your growth is flat, don't fret. You are probably doing better than even some of your peers. Ask your customers, is it that we're less valuable? Or are you just cutting back spend? Or what's the issue? If you've stopped adding new accounts, would your business take a nosedive? If so, you're filling a leaky bucket, which is an expensive way to run a business. That means you have a churn problem. When faced with a churn issue, the question is, do you really have an ideal customer profile issue or a product value issue? Beyond this, do you have funding runway visibility beyond the end of 2025? If not, I would get some and very soon. Look, low interest rates do not seem to be coming soon, and better to be a doomsday prepper with some supplies in reserve than to YOLO your way through 2024 and then be forced to raise money early in 2025 with limited runway. Now a word from our sponsor, Commerce Tools. When a multi-billion dollar beauty brand's e-commerce platform neared the end of its life, the entire business was at risk, including the ability to serve customers. By switching to Commerce Tools and embracing a more flexible mock architecture, the retailer's vision for connecting in-store and personalized shopping experiences became a reality. The brand can now roll out new features within days, securing its position as a modern brand that uses technology to its advantage. If you're being held hostage by your technology platform and your developers have thrown up their hands, tell them to start a free trial at commercetools.com today. It's that time, friends, for our Investor Minute. We have 5 items on the menu today. First, protein snack maker Wild raises $20 million. Protein snack maker Wild has raised $20 million Series A extension. The new funding will help the company grow brand awareness, conduct demonstrations in retailers, and sponsor sporting events. Second, FTC blocks merger of Tapestry and Capri Holdings. Normally, we talk about acquisitions here, but in this case, we have quite the opposite. The Federal Trade Commission has sued to block Tapestry's $8.5 billion acquisition of Capri Holdings, which would combine competitors Coach, Kate Spade, and Michael Kors and develop a dominant share of the accessible luxury handbag sector. Third, Bambuser acquires virtual shopping business Hero from Klarna. Video commerce platform Bambuser has partnered with payment and shopping service Klarna and acquired Hero, a virtual shopping solution from the company. Simple question. Describe Klarna in a few words now. It seems to me that Klarna took quite a big bath on this purchase, acquiring Hero for $160 million and then selling it for 1.3 million euro. Just think about that for a moment. Fourth, Billy Reid merges with Not Standard. Men's and women's apparel direct-to-consumer brand Not Standard has merged with Billy Reid. Billy Reid will take over Not Standard stores and use its AI-based Maze to Measure software in all locations. And finally, Unilever to split off its ice cream unit. Unilever plans to separate its ice cream business from its core holdings and operate 4 business groups: beauty and well-being, personal care, home care, and nutrition. Nutrition? Ice cream? That's strange. Focus is an important part of business. Time to get some Ben and Jerry's fish food, everyone. And today's final word of the week is Saks. The luxury retailer's online presence, Saks.com, has secured funding to bolster its financial position. The company is speaking about a challenging macro environment. Recall that in the boom of the pandemic, Saks.com split into an independent company because dot-com valuations were higher than retail. Well, it turns out it's harder than you think to operate an online business profitably. Who would have thought? I'm sitting here wondering, what does an online retailer do with $60 million in additional funding? Sounds like a big restructuring is coming soon and it needs to de-risk that outcome. Did you know that RMW Commerce has a brand new podcast? Check out the Watson Weekend for an unfiltered and lively e-commerce chat with me, Rick Watson, my co-host, Jess Lisesky, and an array of interesting guests and topics, all focused on e-commerce. You can find the Watson Weekend by searching for it on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube. That's all for this week. Till next time, Watsonians. Hi, I'm Rick Watson, CEO and founder of RMW Commerce Consulting and host of the Watson Weekly Podcast, your essential e-commerce digest. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. The show is produced by Jose Baez, production manager Gabriela Montague. To hear new episodes of the show every Monday morning, subscribe now at rmwcommerce.com/WatsonWeekly and wherever you get your podcasts.